The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
You just patted yourself on the back.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
You're just so great. I love your show.
Am I close?
No.
Does that comfort you?
No.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to confess it, because I'm a holy guy.
I'm a little intimidated to talk to you because you used a lot of big words.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place. You came to the wrong place if you're looking for deep answers.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
That's right. I'm not afraid of being the fluff at times of Catholic media. Thought for the day. Do not fear trying anything new. Remember, a lone amateur built the Ark. A group of professionals built the Titanic. Understand that. Good to have you with me here. You don't have to be an amateur to call in. I don't have to be a professional to listen. However, you can. And you will get a couple of semi-professionals over there in the Ave Maria studio. Andrew Kruchek, producer man. Eric Dumont, call screamer. The number to get onto the program, as always, as it always has been, in the words of Roy Hobbs, the baseball player from The Natural, best there is, best there was, best there ever will be. That number, the best there is, best there was, best there ever will be, at least for you to call in, because it's not going to change. Now, I'm not saying you're going to get the best there is when you call in. However, pays your money, you take your chance. And since you're paying no money, you're not taking any chances. 877-573-7825. 877-57 equal is the number to call. If you're wrestling with something in your life, something's perplexing you, whether it's a kid, spouse, relative, other person. Notice it's always about other people. You ever notice that? Sometimes it's situations. Sometimes it's questions that you have in your head about perhaps your religion as it intersects with your mood or your emotions or your psychology or your thinking. I like those kinds of generic questions. We had a question yesterday on how much should you fear hell? That was a heck of a question. No pun intended. The number again, 877-573-7825. I'm a psychologist. That's what I do for a professional living on the radio here. We can talk, give a few ideas, a few thoughts, options. Education is really what it's all about. 877-57-EQUAL. Now, among you parents and grandparents out there, I know that there is a pretty high percentage of you that would wish that these young upstarts would be, or show anyway, a little more gratitude. They get a lot. And you'd like them to be more appreciative, to understand. It's nicer to get this stuff. Now, it is very hard to raise a grateful child these days. They simply get too much because they breathe. You get your hair cut, you get a rubber spider. You know your CCD abuses? A sticker book. You get to do anything, you get to choose from the goodie bag at school. So you just get stuff. We are stuffed with stuff. And you'd say to yourself, well, I really would like to have my kids be more grateful. My grandkids be more grateful. What do I do? Well, there's a first step to this. Pretty straightforward step. I used to say, I'll just simply get rid of, give away 50% of their goodies, their trinkets, their toys. I don't say 50% anymore. That's ridiculous. 75%. Think about it. If your daughter, your granddaughter has 14 stuffed animals, you give away 3/4 of them. You still got 3 or 4 left. How many stuffed animals do you need? My daughter, when she was in kindergarten, she earned within the first month or two 49 erasers. Why? Because if you read something, you got to go to the goodie bag, and she liked to pick out erasers. And pretty soon she had an eraser mountain. What did my wife and I do? We said, bring all the erasers back except two. Our reasoning? One, reading is its own reward. Two, you don't need 49 erasers. Two is good. Pick the two. I thought we were generous giving her two. Well, I don't know what the teacher thought. The teacher probably thought we were book burners of some type. Nah, just eraser erasers. So what can you do? How can this manifest itself? Here's one simple, simple thing. You go out to a fast food place. Now, all of them have kids' meals. And in the kids' meals are all kinds of little trinkets and little toys. And you tell the clerk, whether you're a parent or a grandparent, you tell the clerk, we'll have two kids' meals, please. You keep the toys. Now, initially, the clerk looks at you with pity. Ma'am, you don't understand. See, on our planet, if you order the kids' meal, you get to keep the toy. You didn't pay for that. Well, you explain yourself a little further. That's okay. I think it's privilege enough. I'm taking them out to eat, you know, ordering from a big long list of food. Pretty much in human history, only the kings and very wealthy could do that. I think it's enough. I think it's privilege enough to eat out. They don't need a toy every time we eat out. Now, the look changes from pity to one of, man, lady, you're bizarre. Besides, on a purely practical level, you know what happens to these things. You get them home. You step on them for 3 weeks. Finally, you put them in the trash. You cover them over with coffee grounds so they can't smell them. And the next day you hear, hey, how'd that get in there? I only got 38 of those. That's my favorite one, too. Now, you ask the clerk this question. Have you ever had anybody do this before? I know the answer you're going to get. I can guarantee the answer you're going to get. No. No, you're the first. Now, you see, folks, of the thousands and thousands of people who have gone through there with kids, if you say to yourself, I just really don't want them marketing to my kid, taking him out to eat, that's good. They're not going to look at you and say, wow, you're a thoughtful parent. How insightful. I had never considered that. No, 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 no. They look at your kid or your grandkid like, is this your mom? Is this your dad? Is this your grandpa? You can call children's services. See how much resistance you run up against? If you try to cut back on the stuff. Now, we never, ever got the toy with our kids. Ever. And, of course, we got the grief. And, of course, our kids roamed around within the fast food joint looking at all the toys that the kids were playing with. Okay, no, they didn't. We didn't let them roam around. We just let them eat French fries off of other people's plate. Given that, did that make them, let's say, not so attracted to stuff when they became adults? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. But we were just taking a stance. That's all. We were taking a stance. Do we expect that stance to work 28 years hence? Probably not. Probably not. Because the culture is awash in getting stuff. I mean, think about it. You drive by any bunch of garages, and you look down the street. What is sitting outside? The car. The car, for most people, is the second most expensive possession they own next to their house. But the car can't get in the garage. Why? Because the garage is stuffed with stuff. We got to have storage sheds to put our stuff in. Then we have yard sales. Yard sales where we sell our stuff to other people so they can have more stuff. And then they can have their yard sale to sell their stuff. It's like the fruitcake at Christmas time. Just gets passed around. One fruitcake, that's all that exists. But every Christmas, because fruitcakes don't rot, every Christmas somebody else gets that fruitcake. If you're going to cut back, you're going to get resistance. not only from the people at the fast food places, but from relatives especially, because they think it's their privilege and duty to give your kids stuff. And that's nice. I'm not doubting their good intentions. I'm simply saying, if you as a parent just don't want that, it's just too much. And you're seeing it in your kid. They just aren't as grateful for all the stuff as you'd like them to be. Then you got to cut back. Will you get grief? Yeah. Yeah, because you're going to be out of sync. You're going to be out of sync with the direction of the culture. Jesus was out of sync with the direction of his culture. So, watch out for the stuff. 877-573-7825. I'd like to hear from you. Thank you.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 40 years of experience. 17,000 current students. Pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton. Some of our children. Tell you this. Two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. That is setonhome.org.
Colossians chapter 1, verse 10. Live a life worthy of the Lord and please Him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work, increasing in the knowledge of God. Knowledge by acquaintance is what St. Paul's talking here. We need to increase our acquaintance of God. What can we do to increase our knowledge of God? Well, study Scripture, pray, fast. But here's the obvious question. Are you increasing in the knowledge of God? Or are you simply kind of staying stable? You're living off past encounters. When we speak of increasing our knowledge of God, as I said, you can read all the books you want about God and you'll have lots of information, but it doesn't mean that you'll necessarily become acquainted with Him. We need to know God by acquaintance, and that's what lies at the heart of all true religion.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Providing the restaurant guarantee. If you're a parent or grandparent, you go to a restaurant. One, those children will never act up. And two, about once every five or six visits to a restaurant, someone, usually an elderly person, will come up and congratulate you on the behavior of your children, especially if you say grace before meals. But I got to tell you, if you say grace before meals, you are taking a risk. Because if your kids then act obnoxious and spray paint walls and start fires in the restaurant and you just said grace, yeah, bad look, real bad look. All righty. I want to talk to Bill. This is kind of a generic, semi-moral, semi-political kind of statement from Salt Lake City. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How are you, Dr. Ray, today?
Yeah, nothing gaining on me. Nothing coming up in the outside lane.
Well, I'm a graduate of a Catholic college, Catholic high school, Christian Brothers in high school, Dominican nuns in grade school. I'm a very active Catholic in my parish here, St. Ambrose. But I have a real problem with Catholics. Like 49% of them voted for Biden. And the Catholic Church has been committed to the Democratic Party since the 60s. But my biggest problem is not recognizing that Donald Trump, the greatest pro-life president ever, put three conservative justices on that Supreme Court. And I don't hear the Catholics or the Catholic Church or anybody saying, let's pray for those justices And let's pray for Donald Trump for all he did for the Catholic Church.
Well, Bill, you bring up about several good points. I'd like to address them one at a time. First of all, the pro-life position, when we say we put conservative pro-life justices on the Supreme Court, that makes it sound like the Supreme Court is just another legislative body, and we have to put people with a certain legislative perspective. I think it's more accurate to say that you want to put people on the Supreme Court that have a more constitutional look, a more literal look at the Constitution. So if that's the case, it's probably safe to say that the three justices that were confirmed for the Supreme Court probably were of that perspective. And their ruling was based upon the fact, and this is so sad, but you can see the media run with this. Their ruling was based upon the fact that there's nothing in the Constitution that guarantees federally, constitutionally, some kind of right to abortion. Never was seen up until 1973. Their point was, it's with bad law, bad interpretation of the Constitution, and we're not going to outlaw abortion, although I personally would wish that could happen, but we're going to return it to the states. Now, regarding Catholics, I don't know where you're listening, Bill, but as far as I can tell, through a lot of social media and Catholic media, any place where there are people like you who take their faith seriously, they're very grateful for this decision. And I've heard many times, got to pray for the justices, got to pray for their safety. This is absolutely hideous, the way they're being treated. It's beyond comprehension to me. The pro-life folks did not do this in 1973 when that sweeping decision came down that eventually, well, literally wiped out any kind of constrictions on full abortion. There weren't temper tantrums. Demonstrations in front of the judges' houses. There was not a summer of rage. There wasn't any of this. That should tell you something. That should tell any clear-thinking person something, whichever side of this abortion debate you come down on. That should tell a person something, which is, wait a minute. Why didn't the pro-lifers do this when the whole decision went against their everything they hold dear? Why is this happening, especially, and now I'm getting on a rant now, especially when you got foreign leaders weighing in on how terrible we all are now here in the U.S., and 47 out of 50 European countries have stricter abortion regulations than we do. 47 out of 50 say you can't have an abortion after 12 and some of them after 15 weeks. That's much more strict than ours. When we want to have in the states unrestricted abortion all the way up to the moment of birth, a baby coming out and crushing its skull and ripping it out of the mother, and you ought to see the pictures, they ain't pretty. When we want to say that's okay, we are now in line with North Korea and China. So, Bill, I know what you're saying, but I've seen an awful lot of people praying, and as a matter of fact, I will go so far as to say I believe it has been 50 years of prayers from the pro-life community that finally brought this ruling out into the open to be reassessed as it should have been, according to many legal scholars. God bless you, Bill. Good call. Thank you. Appreciate it for letting me rant and rave. All right. Steve of Boston, Mass. Has an unruly teenager. How'd it get that way, Steve? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, so is this unruly teenager just become unruly? Or no, this kid pushed on you and with success, and now he's bigger and older, and she's bigger and older, whoever it might be.
Kind of all of the above. She's 14, bigger than me, stronger than me, and ever kind of since homeschooling, or not homeschooling, pandemic schooling, going back to school, unruly to the just we go at it like cats and dogs. And you just said it's a one-time thing. It is. I have a coffee, now I want ice cream, and what's next and what's more, and when I put my foot down, we just go at it.
Well, now, Steve, you just said something of major significance. You said, we go at it. When a parent goes at it with a kid, that means the parent does not have authority, and the parent is on the same level as the child. You don't need to go at it with your daughter. You need to establish what your expectations are and then back them up. For example, does she have a smartphone?
She does not. We took it away, and you know that now becomes an issue. When am I getting it back?
Well, the problem there is you decide when it comes back, but if you have a defiant, unruly teenager, why would she ever get it back? That's the first thing.
She's thinking,
well, okay, that's your decision as a parent. But the other thing is, for example, if she's disrespectful, what do you do about it?
We just try to take away whatever we can, or we don't let her, I don't think involved in activities, but if there's something special we're doing, we might say, look, you're not getting ice cream tonight, or you're not going to get Dunkin' Donuts with the rest of us today. Whatever we can.
You take away a goodie. What if you added a consequence? In other words, you're going to write a 500-word essay on respect each and every time, and you won't have any privilege. You're going to tell me she won't write it?
She really doesn't do anything I tell her.
Well, my friend, okay, you opened up an issue far broader than a radio call. Okay, I deal with parents in my office like you all the time, who basically say my kid is completely out of control. What I find, I'm going to give you the good news. What I find is the parents in 90% of the cases are not doing what they could be doing. They're not. They're allowing this child to make family life miserable. They're allowing this child to be completely defiant. They are simply allowing too much freedom and social movement, and they're not monitoring her friends, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I cannot give you a formula to say, okay, do this and your kid will be fine. I can refer you to some books I have. I have books on my website that deal with discipline. One is called Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. Another one is Good Discipline, Great Teens, although I think right now that is being re-released down the road, so we don't have it, but that'd be the one you would want. And there's a couple other books there on discipline, and they talk an awful lot about disrespect, defiance, school problems, sibling problems, lying, social media, cell phones, everything. Talk all about that. You go to drray.com. Steve, and you should get some good suggestions from that. All right, my friend. But just I'm going to leave you with one thing. I'll leave you with one thing.
Please.
Disrespect leads to a 200-300-400-500 word essay, whatever you want, and she doesn't get any privileges at all until the essay is turned in respectfully and completed. Very simple, very straightforward. But that will be your new response to disrespect, because I'm sure there's a boatload of it. Thank you, my friend. God bless you. Thank you for the call. 877-573-7825. You folks up there, don't go. I'm going to get to you, and I'm going to appreciate your patience. Anything else I have to say here? Because I only got about 20 seconds till the music starts. Steve is representative of most of the folks who come in my office with an unruly teenager. There's an awful lot the parent can do to make the situation better. There truly is. But when you open it up and say, well, she just doesn't do anything we want her to do, that is a very, very broad situation. And I wouldn't be fair to Steve to say, okay, do this, and it'll all be fixed. 877-573-7825. Thank you.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
This communion with Jesus and with one another, that being united to him and abiding in him, that is the indispensable condition for bearing fruit. That's why our Lord says back in John 15, verse 5, apart from me, you can do nothing. If you're not united to Christ, you're not going to do anything for him. So communion with Jesus, our Savior, focusing on him and getting to know him and be known by him, that is what makes it possible for us to bear fruit as Christians. And communion with others is the most magnificent fruit that the branches can give. That's one of the things that he's looking for from us, that we have a communion with one another, that we have a love and a concern. Does it mean we agree with one another? Not necessarily.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Who is the Creator's masterpiece? The Catholic Catechism says that God's masterwork of the mission of the Son and the Spirit is the all-holy, ever-Virgin Mary. She, for the first time, was the dwelling where the Father could place His Son and His Spirit to live among men. The Church, says the Catechism, has often read the most beautiful texts on wisdom as relating to Mary. She is acclaimed in liturgy as the seat of wisdom. The Holy Spirit prepared Mary for her great task by filling her with grace, and by sheer grace she was conceived without sin. It was appropriate that she, in whom the Eternal Son would dwell, would herself be without any stain of original sin. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism. Please visit us at our website, www.maltausa.org.
Is that a piccolo? I remember I watched the Brian Piccolo story way, way, way back. Brian Piccolo was a running back with Gale Sayers. He had, I think he was a Vietnam vet, I think. And Piccolo and Sayers were a heck of a backfield, and Brian Piccolo got cancer and died very, very young. James Caan, I think, played Brian Piccolo. James Caan's got some of the broadest shoulders I have ever seen in any actor. Okay. Go to Thomas. Thomas from Kentucky. He has an idea that I could easily steal if I like the idea, and I will put it in a book along with other ideas, and I will make a whole lot of money. Hi, Thomas.
Well, I want you to make a whole lot of money, then.
Appreciate it. Then I can buy my kids and grandkids a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that's the problem, you know. We think we got to give our kids stuff to make them happy. But I want to comment on two things and going in kind of different directions, but leading to the same. My children raised up, we gave them everything we could as far as within normal means, you know, stuff or whatever. But anyways, like senior trips, we paid for it. I bought them their first car within reason. They kept their grades up. I rewarded that. And it was a reward in itself also for them. But, like, for prom dresses and stuff, my daughter worked with me during the summer. And I was going to pay for it anyways. But I'm like, you know, I'm going to get a little something out of it myself and teach her something. And she valued everything I ever did. Come, like, later in life, I'm 52, been married 30 years. I got a 28-year-old, 24-year-old. They both have their college degrees. They paid for it themselves. But I helped them, you know, whatever they needed as much as I could. And they appreciated. So I didn't give them stuff, but I took stuff to a degree, if you want to call it that, and made a lesson out of it. And
well, you,
they turned
you,
out to be really good kids.
You gave them opportunities is what you did.
Yeah. So, you know, there's no manual that tells you you do this and your kids turn out perfect.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Apparently, you haven't read any of my books.
No.
There's the manual.
Well, you can read it and you can apply it, but it does not mean they're going to follow it.
I know that. I, of all people, as a father, know that. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. So we're basically saying the same thing, just maybe different words. But anyways, you know, so they turned out really good. I have a grandbaby now, same father. But here's the number one thing growing up that I taught my kids from the beginning. I am your dad. I am not your best friend. I am not your friend. I am more than they will ever be. And you have to respect that because no one will be there for you like me or your mom.
Well, something tells me that raising your kids the way you did was not predicated on what you said, which is, I am your dad, I will not be your best friend. That
it was
what you did. You reflected that attitude in what you did pervasively in your parenting. That was the difference. Because I'm going to have to let you go, buddy, because I got to get to some more calls. But every parent pretty much tells their kids, I'm not your best friend, I'm your parent. But then if they don't act it that way, that's when they run into trouble. Thank you, Thomas. Good stuff. Tony, I'm telling you, Tony, you're losing control of a four-year-old. Come on. Hi, Tony. Tony.
Yes.
You got a...
Yes, I'm here.
You got this four-year-old smacking people on the backside.
Yes. So I'm actually, I just picked him up from camp. I pulled back in to work, sitting in the car, thinking I was going to step out.
So wait a minute. This just happened.
Okay, backstory. He is definitely our hardest. We have seven between my husband and I. It's his, mine, and our situation. He and I have four, and they're the youngest, six and under. We have four, so he is age four also, and so he is definitely our difficult one. Pre-K three, I mean, he's having trouble at nap time. He's constantly, you know, there was 1 week. About mid-year of school where each day they get, you know, their little attitude graded on behavior. Smiley faces, green, yellow, or red, frowny faces. So there was 1 week out of the entire school year where he got all greens all week.
He's setting the record for reds. They're going to put a little pennant up on the wall. That, you know how they put state championship up on the wall? They're going to have your kid's name up there, the record. Most reds in a row, huh?
Believe me. You know, I want a champion, but not in that way.
Okay. Well, what happened to him when he came home with a red? What'd you do?
So we always put him in timeout when he gets reds.
Wait, that's it?
Well, okay. So another thing. So I have made it a point to talk to the teachers at school. The main disciplinarian said, we handle it at school. It's too young to continue to discipline him. We've handled it. He doesn't even remember what he did. And so my husband and I were kind of like on the fence.
You don't have to buy that. Tony, you're the parents. You don't have to buy that. I got that from my preschool kids teacher back when, and I said, well, he broke two rules. One, he broke your rule in the classroom, and two, he broke my rule, which is don't break your teacher's rules, which is a much more serious rule. That standard child development rationale, it does not work. That's part of the reason he's given them such grief, because whatever they did to handle it, and I'm pretty convinced they didn't do much, okay?
Right.
Typically, they don't. Child development people really are ill at ease with discipline. So whatever they did was not much. He comes home and he sits in timeout for what? 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes? Big deal. Stinking deal. I would do this.
Right.
You don't have to tell them this. I know this is only one element of what you're dealing with. However, if he comes home with a red, he simply loses all privileges for the evening and he goes to bed early. He can't go outside. He can't watch TV. He has no toys. He has no stuffed animals. He gets no dessert. He does not get to eat what he wants for supper. He can't color. He doesn't have his stuffed animal on his bed. All of that. And you tell him, if you come home with a red, son, this is what we're going to do. I guarantee you, you'll see less reds. Guarantee it.
I am ready for that day.
Well, the problem is, Tony, you guys, you and the school aren't doing much. And the sad thing of it is, here's the problem. Here's the real sad thing. they're going to start complaining about your son. They're going to start saying, he's too difficult. Maybe he shouldn't be here. He's too immature. We're going to check him for ADHD. We're going to look into this. Are you looking at his diet? They're going to start doing all that. When much of the time it is because he's a little more pushy, he's a little more stubborn than your other kids. Okay, I got that. Out of seven kids, somebody's got to be the pushiest. So given that, you're going to say to him, well, son, I'll tell you what. When you give your teacher a rough time and you don't listen, it's going to be heavy consequences at home. And then you can just count on that. And hey, you know, the other side of the coin is you come home with a green, I'll let you stay up later, or I'll give you extra ice cream, or something you pick out. Thanks, Tony. This is Dr. Ray.
Welcome to Spirit of Stewardship. Jeremy Belsky is your host for real life stories, encouragement, and ideas to enhance your own gifts of work, wealth, and wisdom in response to God's blessings for you.
I'm Jeremy Belsky, and today's topic is stewardship, a new spin on the money back guarantee. We've all heard it. Your satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. A business will back its product regardless of the amount used or consumed. They know it's worth the expense in order to maintain the customer's future business. But what about stewardship and our effort to make it a way of life? How does being a good steward of our work, wealth, wisdom, and prayer guarantee anything? The analogy between a business's money-back guarantee and living a stewardship way of life each produces a result. With the business model, you get a new product. With the stewardship model, you get the lifelong opportunity to enter the kingdom of heaven through faith and good works. Jesus wants you to do good with what you have based on how he has blessed you. He shows his love and forgiveness through the sacrament of confession and shows encouragement and hope throughout our daily prayers to him. Jesus sees his gifts to you when he sees you give to others. We are all created in God's likeness and image. Thus, we all have different gifts to share. Perhaps two key questions to ask yourself to gauge your own level of stewardship is this: what am I giving? And how am I being called to increase my performance? Spend some quiet time in prayer, preferably in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, and ask for God's guidance in living a stewardship way of life. Let His money back guarantee bring you peace, love, and happiness. I'm Jeremy Belsky, your host for Spirit of Stewardship.
To learn how you can better share your talents and resources, contact your local parish priest. Your level of involvement in the church now positively impacts our faith in the future.
Bumper, Andrew, that's a good one. Thank you for joining me here. Dr. Ray Grandy, program Doctor is in. Co-production, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, some 400 to 500 stations, I think over 500 around the world, which I'm really not working on more of my languages. I'm trying. I can do Australian and British, but that's pretty much my upper limit. And then the folks over at Ann Arbor. Ave Maria Radio Communications with my cohorts, compatriots, associates, Andrew Gruchek, Eric Dumont, along with Mike Jones, Al Cresta, and Teresa Tomio. Oh, Chris made a decision, and it is typically the fallout that you get when you make a decision like this. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Okie dokie. So, your daughter is 36. She has 8 children. Now, am I going to assume that because she has 8 children, she sees herself as a very faith-filled mother?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So, one of the kids, how old was this child who came forward?
14.
Okay. And the abuse that this child said was what?
The use of a shock collar as a form of punishment.
Ouch. You think that's legit?
Yeah. Initially, I didn't want to believe it, but then seeing a video of other things that he had taken of her with other children, with other siblings, and then him coming to our house, we lived on a stake at our house, and repeating the same story with the sheriff in our house to, you know, to guide us, then I felt, yeah, this is legit.
What did Child Protective Services do about all this?
So we called them, and they did an investigation and visited them at their house. At the end of the day, it doesn't sound like they did much. Their stance is that they want to try and keep a family together, which is absolutely great. They recommended some things for her, but at the end of the day, they didn't force her to do anything.
So no parenting course, no ongoing monitoring, nothing like that?
Not that we're aware of. Again, we don't necessarily get all the details, but yeah, okay. Nothing like that.
Well, the possibility still exists that the 14-year-old was exaggerating. We don't know that, but if CPS is essentially saying we're not going to remove any of the kids from the home, and furthermore, we're not going to make her or her husband go through any kind of reparative program, then you have to ask the question, does CPS minimize this, or in fact, are there details you don't know about? Is that a fair question?
Yes.
Okay. Has she shut you out of her life?
Yes.
Okay. Did she give you any warning? Did she call and basically unload on you and say, I can't believe you did this. Don't even think you're going to ever see my kids again?
That's exactly what she did.
How long ago?
It was about a year ago.
Oh.
Not quite a year.
So, for all intents and purposes, do you have other children?
Yes.
What's their approach to all this?
So she involved, we weren't going to involve them with it, but she decided to get them involved and tell her side of the story about all this. And I don't know exactly what she told them, but one of them basically sided with her and keeps us pretty much at a distance. The other one has been pretty neutral about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Boy, it's really hard here. You got a he said, she said situation, even though you did say you had some evidence here. It's hard for me to believe that there's really hard evidence like that, and CPS just still said, well, okay, don't do it anymore. That doesn't sound like the way a standard CPS would approach this, but who knows? Like you say, there's just a lot of details unknown. What have you done to try to heal the relationship?
So, again, this happened about last July, August. She also has one of the other children was just finishing up leukemia treatment. And so he was ringing his bell, you know, to signify the success of that. We went down, we flew down just to be there to support them.
Hey, Chris, are you in a car with your window down?
No, I am in a car. Windows up, sorry.
Okay, yeah, we get a lot of heavy wind kind of feedback. Is there any way you can improve the call?
They try and make it better here for us. But, yeah, so we went down to celebrate the child's ringing of the bell, finishing up his leukemia treatment, and didn't really even try and approach them just to be there. She saw us and actually attacked us. Actually came up behind my wife and shoved her.
Yikes. Well, that says something, doesn't it? that adds a little weight to the accusation. Well, I think, my friend, you made a decision to do what you thought was right and needed to be done. And my guess would be that she's probably she's gonna stand her ground and not let you back into the children's lives.
Yeah. You know, there's just been other little signs. I mean, she's pushed her husband out of the picture. He's moved out. They're getting a divorce. She's, you know, covered her arms with tattoos. I mean, it's not that
Ouch.
Big deal, but it's
well, obviously she's showing a lot of signs of being overwhelmed with all the demands. Have any of the older kids tried to reach out to you behind her back?
No. It seems like she has really convinced them that we're out to, you know, do them harm or take them from her or something to that effect. I don't know.
Well, my friend, this is one of those, just from what little you're telling me, obviously I have to plead ignorance on all the details, but from what little you're telling me, if she has decided you have committed the unforgivable sin, and there is no way at this point that she will ever allow you back into the children's lives, then you're probably in a situation where one by one, as they turn 18 and they either move out or make decisions, some of them will recontact you, I would guess. As far as she's concerned, it doesn't look good because the husband left, so there was a source of support, perhaps. And she may be doing a lot of things that are perplexing. You don't understand this. This is a woman who seemed to welcome children, who wanted children, and all of a sudden you're getting signs that it's not going so good. But yet she doesn't want to let anybody take a look at it. Just from what you told me, you're stuck. You're stuck. You're gonna have to do what you do, which is I'm sure you've prayed, and hope that at some point something changes in the relationship. Who knows? If that was legitimate, and something similar happens again, and somebody reports it, then now you're looking at a completely different picture. So I'm afraid I can't give you any ways to heal the relationship because she flat out doesn't want to have a relationship with you. But I'll leave you with this. Don't second guess what you did. Even if you were quote unquote wrong or impulsive, your intentions were to protect and to help. So you can't punish yourself and say, oh, gee, if we had it to do over again, we'd never do it. You made a judgment. Life is judgments. Life is mostly not black and white, except in some morality. You made a judgment. You made the call. And when somebody else is affected by that call, you can't predict how they're going to react. And sometimes that reaction just includes, get out of my life. Stand strong, Chris. This is Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Many Catholics, and this is what I had to learn because I was challenged early on when I came back to the church by very solid, Protestants who knew the Scripture very well. Well, why do you believe this? You know, and I wasn't able to in the beginning to explain it from Scripture. And that really was a great catalyst for me. And then I discovered EWTN and Catholic Answers Live. And I'm talking almost 30 years ago. And I became addicted to apologetics. And so I was able to understand it from not only a church teaching perspective, but obviously a scriptural perspective. And I think this is a good lesson, I think, for all of us. Not that we have to be, you know, a mini Carl Keating or something or a Scott Hahn, but that we should have a basic understanding of the faith enough to be able to confidently respond when someone who's on that journey is asking us questions.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I said to the sisters one day, what do you think you're going to look like in heaven? Oh, some of them had absolutely magnificent ideas. I didn't think of one of them. And so I got desperate because then my turn came. I didn't know what to say. And so in desperation, I said, what do you think I'll wear in heaven? And they all said with one voice, armor!
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Thank you for joining me,
Dr. Rager.
I'm going to wade into this one. And if I don't get to your call, please, please call back. You'll be first up. Marita from Texas. Her husband is telling her that physically she's let herself go. That she has gained a measure of weight. Hi, Marita.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
Okay. Well, how rough is he when he tells you this?
Well, actually, he's been distant until I finally kept, I guess, poking at it to figure out what was going on. And then that's when he told me that I had let myself go and had gained weight, given...
He's not attracted to you anymore.
Basically, that's what I told him. And given I've run around with our children, I've given my whole time to him, making sure everything's done for him at home, stopped my career so that I could be a mom, and so that's where we're at.
So what do you think about his accusation here?
What do I think?
Yeah.
I think it's hurtful. I think you love for better, for worse, in sickness and in health. And he's not Mr. Fitness, you know, guru or anything like that. So I don't see where he gets off to saying those things to me. And I think love is love.
Okay, what if I said, Marita, that I agree with everything you said? Would that do anything for you?
Yes, because I would feel like I'm not to blame.
Do you like your weight?
Okay, I'm 52. You know, women's body changes, childbirth. Of course, no, I don't think anybody's really satisfied with their body, but I'm not. I see other women and I compare myself, and I don't think I'm that bad. I'm not over 200 pounds. I'm not even over 160 pounds.
So you're just carrying a little bit of extra weight.
Right.
And he says, I really don't want to have a whole lot to do with you physically because I just don't think you look that great anymore. That's his message.
Correct.
Well,
though he says he loves me, but I'm like, you can't say that wholeheartedly when you have these other feelings about me.
Did you ask him if there's anything else? In other words, a lot of times people point to one thing, and that's a cover for other stuff that's going on. Does he not like the way he thinks you're moody, or he thinks you nag, or he thinks you argue, or he thinks you are weak, a disciplinarian? Is there other things?
Well, I think he probably thinks that when we do have our arguments that I'm the one that starts it. But I think what happens, Dr. Ray, is that he doesn't see his faults. Like, he's Mr. Perfect, and he has no blame in anything.
Marita, what you say about him being rough in saying this stuff, and what you say that he doesn't look at himself, and what you say is for better or for worse to love your partner, that's all dead on target. The problem you have is for whatever his reasons, and I still think we don't know what they all are. You might want to explore those. He's doing it. If you say he shouldn't do it, that's not right. Okay,
right.
You're right. But he is doing it. So now you have to tell yourself, okay, what am I going to do about it? Am I going to find out what the real reasons are? Or am I going to say, so are you telling me that if I'm 20 pounds lighter, things change? Is that what you're saying? So I got to run. You call back, please. I want to talk some more about this. This is Dr. Ray. I got to go. Please walk with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.